Ace Vingen and Donick 102.5, the game. Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you. We are live at Bridgestone Arena, where the Predators will be reacquainted with the Philadelphia Flyers. They just played them last Thursday, I believe, and now the Flyers are here. Puck drop at 7, pregame at 6, as always, right here on 102.5, the game. Willie Donick out again today, resting his velvety pipes. He will be on the broadcast tonight on FanDuel Sports Network. I hear there will be a three-man booth. Hal Gill will be stepping into the television booth with Willie and Chris Mason just to give Willie a little extra help as he recovers from his sore throat. So Willie will be off the show again today, but you'll hear him tonight on the broadcast at 7 o'clock on FanDuel Sports Network.
Yeah, that's what happens, man, when you are – one of the best television analysts in hockey, and you got to do one of the best, if not the best show in the world, you know. So you kind of run into that dilemma, you know, radio show. It kind of run into that dilemma. So he had to take a break, you know. He has to go out and he has to perform. He has to be at his A game, as close to his A game as possible. Is this another – okay, last night – 2 nights ago was the Jordan game. What would this be? Would it be – was Kobe ever sick? Like,
It's not quite Willis Reed.
Yeah, no, it's not Willis Reed. No. Gosh, we got to find one.
Greatest athletic performances while ill.
While ill. Well, I need to think about that one.
If you have any ideas, 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Also, I know that Michael Jordan's performance is known as the flu game, but wasn't it food poisoning?
I don't know
It was. It was food poisoning.
Right. Because it was a slice of pizza. He was eating pizza the night before, and he had food poisoning from it.
Okay. See, the food poisoning game doesn't have the same
ring to it. Like,
right. As the flu game.
Yeah.
Doesn't roll off the tongue as well. But Willie Donick had his flu/food poisoning performance on Tuesday in Minnesota. We hope Willie is feeling better. He says he is. And you'll hear him on the call tonight at 7 o'clock on FanDuel Sports Network. Again, Predators versus Flyers here from Bridgestone Arena. Derek.
Yes.
I saw a quote on X today that made me laugh. It came from New York Jets head coach Aaron Glenn. And the New York Jets are in a similar position as the Tennessee Titans. Both teams are bad. But we know what the Jets did a couple of days ago at the NFL trade deadline. They traded Sauce Gardner. They traded Quinnen Williams. Multiple first-round picks coming back to the New York Jets. And this was the quote that made me laugh. This was from Connor Hughes, who reports on the Jets for SNY. Quote, head coach Aaron Glenn said that he wants the Jets to be a team fans are proud of, but, quote, I never said they were going to be proud of them right now.
Well, I mean, he's being honest.
And don't Titans fans feel the same way?
Yes.
The Titans want you to be proud of them. But they also acknowledge that you're probably not going to be proud of them right now. And totally understandable. This team has given you, the fans, very little to feel proud about over the past few seasons. So yesterday, Mike Borgonzi, Titans GM, addressed reporters following the NFL trade deadline. And he laid out his plan for the Tennessee Titans. And we'll get into certain aspects of that plan over the course of the program. By the way, Mitch Light of The Athletic will join us at 3:40 to talk college football. Elliot Freeman of Sportsnet will join us at 5 to talk hockey. But Mike Borgonzi, near the end of his news conference, was asked about cornerstone players. How many cornerstone players do the Titans have on their roster right now? Here was Mike Borgonzi's response to that question.
In terms of the roster, you talked about Jeff being a cornerstone. You talked about the rookies being building blocks. How many building blocks do you feel like you have on this roster currently? Is it 20? 15?
Those are the things we're going through right now. So you try to identify, you know, at least, you know, I think Cam is one. You know, I think some of these rookies can be. I think Jeff is one. You know, and I'm not going to go through every player on the roster, but you would try to identify maybe like three, four, five guys. And you saw that in the past with Kansas City. It's like the same four guys that have been there for that whole run there, right? So, yeah, I do think there's some cornerstone players here that can be part of this. Some of them are younger now and they have to develop. And we need to continue to add to that.
So that was Mike Borgonzi answering the question, how many cornerstone players do you think you have on this roster right now? And that's the question we are going to attempt to answer at the start of the program. How many cornerstone or potential cornerstone players do the Titans have on their roster currently? By the way, one more guest today, Paul Kaharsky of PaulKaharsky.com will join us at 4:20. So Mitch Light at 3:40, Paul Kaharsky at 4:20, Elliot Freeman at 5 o'clock. Off the top of my head, Derek,
yes,
there are two. Cam Ward and Jeffrey Simmons. Mm-hmm. End of list. So to me, it's determining how many other players on the roster currently have the potential to be cornerstone players. I don't know how many there really are. You could maybe make a case for Peter Skoronski, but then again, how many guards are considered cornerstone players around the NFL? Perhaps you could throw J.C. Latham into the mix. But J.C. Latham's young NFL career has had its ups and downs already. Dan Moore has signed for a few more years. Starting left tackle. Starting left tackles are usually cornerstone players. But Dan Moore, the rap against Dan Moore when the Titans signed him in free agency is that he gave up a lot of sacks in Pittsburgh. And he's doing the same thing here. So, to me, I'm not sure how many other cornerstone players the Titans have on their roster right now other than Cam Ward and Jeffrey Simmons. Are there any that stand out to you, either who you consider cornerstone players right now or who have the potential to be cornerstone players in the near future?
Well, the guys that I look at, because – what is the definition of a cornerstone player? A guy that has the potential, or you believe, that is a second contract guy, which means he's going to be in your organization for the next 4 to 7 years. So those guys are typically guys that are going to set the standard for you, that is going to be involved in a lot of wins and hopefully, you know, be the pillars that ultimately wins you a championship. We went through it here. When I got drafted in 97, when I went to Baltimore, it was the same thing. Those pillars were always there because those were guys that they signed early, and they end up being second contract guys to their organization. Now, I look at the Titans, and off the hand is Cam and Jeffrey Simmons, obviously. Jeffrey would be going into his third contract, and that's rare in this business, especially with a second team. But the way free agency is and the new collective bargaining, these guys sign 5-year deals, end up only spending 2 years, so they're able to either extend the contract or go on somewhere else. But I look at Jeff, so that's two. Another guy that I believe has the potential, and he is slowly becoming a leader is Cedric Gray. Cedric Gray, to me, is a guy, a second contract guy. If he continues, he's not flashy. But what he is he's consistent. He's tough. He's physical. He's available. He's a guy. He's a smart individual. You need guys like that at your linebacker position because essentially those are your quarterbacks. You know, those are guys that are pointing people in the direction, making sure guys know what they need to do. Cedric Gray, to me, has the potential to be another pillar. So that's three. And then if you look at the offensive line, the only one that I would say is Peter. I think Peter is the second contract guy here, which would put him at this organization for 7 to 8 years, 7 to 10 years, close to that. So he could be a pillar. But like you said, how many teams, you know, consider their guard a pillar? Well, in this case, it's not about the position. It's about the person. The guy that's going to show up, the guy that's going to be there, the guy that's going to be available, the guy that's going to set a standard or be a part of an, you know, a group setting a standard. So I do look at Peter Skoronski as a pillar from that standpoint. So they have, and then there are other guys on his team that can potentially become leaders, you know. But right now, if you're just talking about four guys that I believe are second contract guys, you're talking Peter Skoronski, Cam Ward, obviously Jeffrey's going into his third contract, and Cedric Gray.
I'm surprised you didn't say Chim Dike.
No, I just no, because
NFL leader be, in all-purpose yards.
But that doesn't make you a pillar of an organization. It's more than that. He has the potential to be one of the leaders, but more than likely, guys like him don't remain on the same team. More than likely, guys like him do so well that the team is put in a dilemma and another team comes and offer a bigger, makes a bigger offer. And those guys typically leave the organization, especially now with the way free agency is. So he could become one of the leaders for this team, but when you're talking pillars, I would rather it be my left tackle, because I know that's a 10-year guy. My quarterback's a 10-year guy. My linebacker's a 10-year guy. And my nose tackle's a 10-year guy. Those are pillars right there. Because all of those guys would have helped you, been a key part of what you're doing from an organizational standpoint. They've been leaders. And they've been guys that have signed multiple contracts with you.
Well, let's think about the cornerstone positions mm-hmm. on an NFL team. Quarterback,
yes.
Right? Of course. Wide receiver. Mm-hmm. Running back. Mm-hmm. Left tackle. Pass rusher. Mm-hmm. Cornerback. Mm-hmm. Inside player. Interior defensive lineman. Right?
Yeah.
So how many is that? Seven?
Yeah.
So you hope it's Cam Ward at quarterback. Mm-hmm. I think it's safe to say that Jeffrey Simmons, because the yes. Titans have said that Jeffrey Simmons is sticking around for
exactly.
now.
Exactly. So he's so, another.
So you've got Jeffrey Simmons as that inside player. Mm-hmm. Wide receiver, TBD. It's not going to be Calvin Ridley. Mm-hmm. Chim Dike looks like he can be special mm-hmm. as a special teamer. We'll see about a pass catcher. So wide receiver is still a question. Running back is still a question. Mm-hmm. Tony Pollard is older. Tajay Spears, jury's still out. This team absolutely needs a pass rusher. Cornerback, this team is devoid of cornerbacks.
Yeah.
No Jarvis Brownlee, no Roger McCreary.
No Snead.
No Legarius Snead. So there are a lot of holes to fill. Mm-hmm. So right now, I think the only two players you can confidently say are cornerstone players are Cam Ward and Jeffrey Simmons. I feel like you have to stretch to find the other ones. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Cedric Gray. I've been really impressed with Cedric Gray. You need players like Cedric Gray on your team. You probably need better players at the position than Cedric Gray on your team. Cedric Gray can be a perfect complementary player, mm-hmm. but this is going to be a multi-year process. The Titans aren't going to fix everything that's broken this offseason. They'll try as hard as they can to fix as many holes as they can, but we know that it's near impossible mm-hmm. to do that in one offseason. This is going to be a process. So the candidates for cornerstone players, I would put Dike in there. I want to see more from him as a pass catcher before I can confidently say, yeah, he can be a cornerstone player. But he looks like he'll be a special player on kickoffs and punt returns. And you need that. You know that full mm-hmm. well. You need impact players at that position. So, one texter, Julio, says, Derek just said it isn't position-based and then list which positions are pillars. I listed the position that
yeah,
were
I
pillars.
Yeah, I didn't list it. I said players.
Yes. But there are two different ways of thinking about that. Mm-hmm. You can look at it just based on the sheer talent mm-hmm. on the roster, regardless of position, or you can look to fill those cornerstone positions we just listed off. There are different ways about it.
Yeah, but I think any organization, you ask them, what is the one pillar they must have, like, because of the position? It's quarterback. Every organ, you got to have that quarterback as one of your pillars, your main pillar, because we've seen so many times, if you don't have a quarterback, you ain't got a team. Or you're scraping and clawing and making sure your defense is top-notch to sort of overcome what the offense can't produce. So based on that, yes, position, I think it is a quarterback. He has, that's very essential to an organization growing and flourishing. But then after that, it's, that's why I look at Jeffrey Simmons. He's a pillar. I look at Cedric Gray. He's another pillar. Peter Skoronski, he could potentially be that pillar. So you got four guys in my mind that their play has shown, and if it consistently shows this, that they will be guys that will be with the Titans, minus Jeffrey Simmons, but that will be with the Titans at least the next 5 to 7 years. To me, and they're going to be playing really good football. Don't underestimate Cedric Gray. I'm telling you, he has the size, he has the speed. He's learning his, he's going to learn this game better and better. His instincts are going to get a lot better. If this kid stays healthy, he's going to be what Bullock was to the Titans team many years ago. And there were other linebackers in between Cedric Gray and Bullock that did a tremendous job. But that's the type of guy he can be. He's rangy. He can get to the quarterback if you blitz him. And he's a good tackler. And he knows what's going on. So that's why I pick a guy like Cedric Gray. To me, he's one of those pillars, regardless of his position. But it just so happens he fall at the strong side. I think he's the strong side, the right side, inside linebacker. So, you know, those are, to me, those are the guys that has the most potential to be pillars. And then those other guys on the outside, those are going to be ultimately be leaders, you know, within their own room. I mean, DK or Alec, they will become eventually leaders inside that wide receiver room unless they bring in another veteran next year that you know, becomes a starter. But I don't think that's going to happen. So it's not that these guys are not going to be – I wasn't a pillar for the Titans, but I was a leader, but I was also a person that contributed heavily to a lot of wins. That's what these other guys are going to be, but you have to have those pillars to hold it up and maintain it.
615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. How many cornerstone or potential cornerstone players do the Titans have on their roster currently? Let us know. 615-737-1025. We will continue the conversation coming up next. In the meantime, the MTSU Blue Raiders will take on FIU this Saturday at 2 o'clock. Catch all of the action on Totally Hits 93.3, with coverage also available on the Totally Hits Nashville app and at TotallyHitsNashville.com. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, live from Bridgestone Arena. Predators and Flyers coming up tonight at 7 o'clock. Pre-game at 6, right here on 102.5 The Game. Our question to you at 615-737-1025. How many cornerstone or potential cornerstone players do the Titans have on their roster currently? Chris on our text line says, you guys kill me by talking about Cam's second contract already. 9 games in and he still didn't have his footwork down pat. Now, we will have one of our periodic Cam Ward vibe checks coming up at 4 o'clock. So we will get to Cam Ward. We are operating under the assumption that Cam Ward will be a cornerstone player because the Titans sure as hell hope that Cam Ward will be a cornerstone player. Jury is still out on that, but you need a quarterback to be a cornerstone player. Joe from Maryland says, if Peter Skoronski is so good, why not try him at left tackle? Linemen have done it before. We need a 10 to 15-year left tackle. Skoronski did play left tackle in college at Northwestern.
He's not a left tackle.
Why not?
He's not. I don't think too many people graded him out, him coming out of college as a, you know, an elite left tackle. I think he was really good in college, but I don't think all of his skill set, I don't think they were transferable in a sense, if that makes sense. I just think him at tackle reached his peak. Not to say he can't play it in the NFL, because I think he can. I think he can kind of go back and forth. But if you want the best out of Peter Skoronski, and I believe that's why you're getting the best, you put him at guard. That's his natural position. But the texture is right. We do got to find a 10 to 15-year left tackle. And on really good teams, more so in the past than now, on really good teams, the quarterback and the left tackle were the two cornerstones. But because of free agency, again, stuff like that tends to not happen all the time.
One texter says, Jeffrey Simmons as a cornerstone to build around is like building around Oscar from The Office. Does the job, does not lead, and is more negative than positive. I will admit this, texter, I've never watched The Office.
Yeah, me.
So I don't know who Oscar is.
I thought you were talking about Oscar the Grouch.
Oscar the Grouch.
That's what I thought.
Sesame Street. I am quite familiar with yes. Oscar the Grouch, but I am not an Office fan, which may surprise some of you. I just don't find it very funny.
Yeah,
but Jeffrey Simmons will continue to be a topic when it comes to cornerstone players, one, because a lot of Titans fans wished the Titans had traded Jeffrey Simmons earlier this week.
Yes.
I was on board with that. Willie was on board with that. You were not on board with that, Derek. But now that Jeffrey Simmons is here, with the caveat that things could change. Mike Borgonzi, you heard him yesterday. Mm-hmm. He loves him some Jeffrey
yes.
Simmons. And he sees Jeffrey Simmons as part of the solution. To me, the most illuminating aspect of Mike Borgonzi's news conference yesterday was when he was discussing Jarvis Brownlee.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, paraphrasing, we don't have the culture here right now to help a player like Jarvis Brownlee who is missing some of the attributes that we prioritize around here. But Borgonzi believes that Jeffrey Simmons is the player who can help that, who can help build that. You can disagree with that. Mm. I certainly have my doubts about it. Because Jeffrey Simmons has at times shown what I would consider a lack of leadership.
Mm-hmm.
But Mike Borgonzi made it crystal clear yesterday that he sees Jeffrey Simmons as part of the solution.
Yeah, that tells you. Listen, what the texter said, there's no deny it. Things that has happened in the past, a few things that have happened in the past, and they've been egregious. So I'm not going to sit here try to sugarcoat. But that was in the past. Are you going to continue to hold that over his head, especially if the GM is coming out and saying, listen, he's one of my guys. He's one of the leaders. The thing that is confusing sometimes, I think, for fans or people on the outside looking in, they see a guy like Jeffrey Simmons and they see the few things that he's done. And again, He needed to learn from those things. You just can't do it. And they think that's how he is all the time. But then I know that a guy that is learning how to be a leader, you may see the few things that he does wrong out on the practice field, but you don't see the so many things he does right inside the building, inside the locker room, inside the meeting rooms, stuff like that. That is why Brinkert and Borgonzi right now, or even at Amy, he's untouchable. He and Cam Ward are those are the two guys that are untouchable. Why? Because obviously, not only because Jeffrey's play, because of what he's showing, not what we see, but what we don't see. That's what people don't. You're just looking at the thing with Buck and the fighting, and the thing with Cam, which I didn't think was too much, but the thing with Cam. So all of a sudden, and he's had some personal fouls in games, and guys have, but you look at that, and it's all of a sudden now he's this bad person. And listen, I've always wanted Jeff. Listen, when he did those things, I called him out on it and said he needs to be better than that. I never said that he couldn't be a leader. I said he needed to be better in order to be a leader. It seems like he's getting better now. And the people that it matters to, they see it inside the locker room, inside that building. That's why when I look at it, I understand why they didn't trade him. I'm not saying don't trade him because I just think he's going to, be the one guy that changes this franchise around. No, it's going to be him and some other guys. But because of his leadership, the leadership that he's showing inside of that building, I'm pretty sure is evident to everybody. They need that in a locker room at that time. Borgans, he said it. We are not equipped to host a bad seed. We're just not. A guy that, yeah, he has the potential. And let me rephrase that. Not a bad seed, because I don't want to make it seem like Jarvis is a bad person. But we're not equipped enough to handle a guy that is a little bit on the edge at times. That we love the aggressiveness, but we also, it can be a hindrance to him. I know, believe me, I know firsthand, it can be a hindrance to you. So when you have a locker room that can contain that and massage that and manicure that, then you keep him. But if you don't, then you have to trade him away and try to get some assets. So Jeff has – that's one of the reasons why, and the main reason why I wanted Jeff here, because of that. And he's playing damn good right now.
One texter says, does cornerstone mean non-tradable?
Yes.
Yes, because you need a cornerstone to prop up your franchise. They are load-bearing walls.
Yes.
The cornerstone players. So, yes, cornerstone means non-tradable. You do not trade away your cornerstone players.
You know what players are, and I was just thinking about this. When you're trying to set, say, have a new coach come in, new GM, and they're trying to set some cornerstones, and they have a young team like this, the cornerstones for this team are sort of like the, what do you call those things, I just had it in my head. I forgot. It's like you put the things inside, like you put the concrete inside these tubes, and then you pull the tube and it sets the concrete. Mm. Whatever it's called. Somebody text in. concrete people, you'll know. But
yeah,
that's
somebody
what,
who's a yes. contractor, please
exactly,
let us know.
Exactly, please let us know. And I got contractors as friends, I should know. But the iteration of the Titans right now, Jeff, Cam, and whoever, those other two guys, that's what they are. They are cast. So when they leave, somebody else is able to be a cast. But that foundation of what we've taught, that's why, and I always point to it, Pittsburgh and Baltimore. Ray Lewis ain't there no more. Suggs not there no more.
Ed Reed.
Palomalo's not there. Ed Reed's not there. Ben Roethlisberger is not there.
Jerome Bettis.
Bettis, he's not. But what has happened? That thing has been set strong by those older guys before them. And all they do is cast around it. They cast around it, and they separate another 10 years, they get somebody else to do it. That's where the Titans need to be. They need to find that cast. The foundation has been set. It's set. It was set back when Houston. Matter of fact, it was set, the Tennessee Titans, it was set with Eddie, Steve, Bruce, those guys, Blaine, those guys. And now it's just cast. Now, who want to be the next one? Cast, who want to be the next one? That's all it is. We haven't found the next four yet.
Steven says the Titans' cornerstones are Jeffrey Simmons, Cam Moore, Chim Dike, Alec Iamanner, Gunnar Helm, Cedric Gray, Femi Oladejo, Kevin Winston, and Tavondre Sweat. That's a lot of cornerstones, Steven. A lot of unproven players in that mix. But let's focus on Tavondre Sweat, because another texter did bring up Tavondre Sweat. Mm-hmm. Tavondre Sweat, in a perfect world, would be a cornerstone for the Tennessee Titans. Nose tackles are important. Mm-hmm. But with all of the rumors that were swirling around ahead of the NFL trade deadline about the Titans maybe trading him, now it didn't happen, but there appear to be some concerns, maybe not as apparent as apparently with Jarvis Brownlee, as Mike Borgonzi detailed yesterday, but it sounds like there are some of the same concerns with Tavondre Sweat as there were with Jarvis Brownlee. And until those get figured out, if they get figured out, I don't think you can put Tavondre Sweat on that list.
Yeah, this season thus far has been it's been a question mark, because he hasn't been playing. You know, and then when he plays, he was okay. And now these things are coming out. Him potentially was, you know, shopped around or people called about him or inquired about him, and maybe the Titans didn't want to give up because they didn't, couldn't get enough. So all those things are swirling around Tavondre Sweat, you know. So when you have that much stuff, and it really is not a lot, but a lot of that is, you know, you can change it, obviously. But right now, does he have what it takes to be a pillar? Does he have the work ethic? Does he have the dedication? I don't know if he does. I'm not saying he doesn't, but I don't know what he does. And when your name starts swirling this young in trade talks, that's not good.
One texter said, did y'all see Jarvis Brownlee's tweet that he will one day let out what he can't say right now after seeing the Borgonzi presser? Him tweeting all that just proves he needed to go. So I went to Jarvis Brownlee's Twitter. Mm-hmm. He quote tweeted Teron Davenport's video of Borgonzi explaining the Jarvis Brownlee trade with a crying laughing emoji and a lips are zipped emoji, then said, one day I'll be able to say how I feel, praying hands, love y'all though. So we'll see, I guess.
Listen, when that stuff happens, again, I know firsthand some of it may be true, some of it may not. But as a player, when you leave an organization, you try not to say nothing bad about the organization until things start to come out, you know, about you. Because it's like, okay, you didn't want me, fine, I'm going about my business. But then once somebody asks you about the player you traded away and you speak on that player like it's so ambiguous, you don't know whether he was a bad player or just a malcontent in a locker. What was he? Because they kept it so vague. And then a player hears that and said, come on, man. Like, if you're going to get up there, tell the truth. Yeah, I did my wrong, but y'all had a lot to do with this too. So that's why when I see that from Jarvis Brownlee, I look at it and say, I understand, bro. What I would tell him is just concentrate on being a Jet right now. That's it.
615-737-1025. We will continue to take your thoughts on Titans cornerstones or potential cornerstone players. Coming up next, Mitch Light of The Athletic will join us as we look ahead to the weekend in college football. We'll also get Mitch's thoughts on the first edition of the CFP rankings. 615-737-1025. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. The Commodores will take on the Auburn Tigers this Saturday. Pre-game begins at 1:30 p.m. on 94.9 The Fan with the kickoff at 3. Vanderbilt football is brought to you by Gary Forrest Acura, Jimmy Kelly Steakhouse, and Smoky Mountain Tops. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, pleased to be joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by Mitch Light of The Athletic, who joins us every Thursday to preview college football. Mitch, the Vanderbilt Commodores, speaking of the Commodores, were number 16 in the first edition of the CFP ranking. So let me ask you this. What is the percentage chance you give Vanderbilt to make the CFP if it wins out? What else must happen for the Commodores to make it into the field?
I would, first of all, Adam, I did not realize that Willie was still sick. I need to review my contract. I think I get hazard pay if it's just you two guys. I don't have the friendly questions that I send to Willie hours before, but I'll make do today.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, so, you know, I would say in the 90% range. It's easy now with, you know, everyone has 3-4 games left to sit here and say, well, there's no path for Team X, there's no path for that team. But things happen. Very rarely do the teams you expect to win every game. So I say 90%, but certain things would have to happen. You know, Texas winning out would not be great for Vanderbilt, but they have two very difficult games. Oklahoma winning out would not be great for Vanderbilt. Maybe you want Notre Dame to lose. Utah. So there's a lot of things, but I would just say if Vanderbilt takes care of business and wins its three games, enough teams would probably lose. It would be a very interesting resume for Vanderbilt, though, at 10-2. There's a chance, I guess, that there's no ranked teams at the end, depending on how Missouri does, you know, with Bo Prabhula not at quarterback. I don't think LSU is going to be ranked. If Tennessee loses to Vanderbilt, would they be ranked? So it would be 10-2 with maybe not the high-end wins, but your two losses would be on the road at Alabama and at Texas. So it's definitely an intriguing question, but, you know, obviously a lot to be played out.
which Power Four team, and you can throw Notre Dame into this as
sure.
well, which Power Four team that was in the initial field is the most susceptible to falling out?
Good one. I would say BYU. I think BYU is going to lose this week, and I think they would probably, quite possibly, lose again to Texas Tech in the league championship game. Now, Utah's still in the picture, but Utah beat BYU head-to-head. So I'm not saying we won't get two Big 12 teams, but of the teams in the field this week, I think BYU would be the one that I'd be the most nervous about.
Now, Mitch, let me phrase it this question this way. Would you be surprised if the SEC conference has blank many participants in the college football playoff? Would it surprise you if they had 6, 7? Or
yeah.
would it surprise you if they only had 2 or 3? And I know 2 or 3 is not going to happen, yes.
Yeah, I think anything over 5, the math is going to be tough. It's an intriguing question. I haven't crunched the numbers and all that. You've got a lot of teams on the sort of, with Texas at 11, Oklahoma at 12, and Vanderbilt at 16. A lot of weird things would have to happen for the SEC to get over 5. And I think from a win-loss standpoint, Texas and Oklahoma would be the only two teams right now that have 2 losses that would have a shot with 3 losses. We've talked a lot about Texas all year. Mm-hmm. They looked good last week against Vanderbilt. We'll see how they look down the stretch. But if they had 3 losses and more, but they would also have a win over Texas A&M or Georgia. So, obviously we'll have to see how things play out. But I would be surprised if there were that many.
Are you surprised that – because when I heard them talk the other day about, the rankings, and they were talking about Notre Dame, and they almost – they counted like it was a badge of honor the close losses they had. But then you look at Vanderbilt and their 2 close losses, regardless of how you say the game went, the game ended 31-34. 2 key mistakes by their quarterback against Alabama, that could have been a different story. But you can look at Vanderbilt and say the same exact thing. So why is it okay to say it about Notre Dame, but not a Vanderbilt? And I get the schools and the history, but if you're just taking it by the premise of, well, they had some close losses, Vandy had some close losses also.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very fair point, and you can argue that Vanderbilt has a better win. Missouri wins that better than Notre Dame's win over USC, probably comparable. Notre Dame is always going to get, I'm not calling it special treatment. They're always going to be talked about because it's Notre Dame and because they're an independent. It's one of the unique things about college football. It might anger some fans if they're still an independent, but they do have a unique resume. The fact that they had 2 very close losses to good teams. Now, that Miami loss isn't as good as it looked because we thought Miami would be a no doubt about it college football playoff team. And that's another subject, that Miami was 8 spots below them. But, you're looking at the entire resume, and the fact that they lost by 1 point at home to Texas A&M on a 4th down play and then a 2-point conversion, there's no doubt that Notre Dame is a good team. Mm-hmm. How good? That's what's fun about the debate. Do you give them credit for close losses? They've pretty much controlled every other game. I know they didn't play great against BC last week. Right now, they are in a beauty contest. They're not just in a math contest. They need to look good and play well down the stretch, and it will help them if Texas A&M and Miami keep winning. But you make a fair point, Derek, about the Notre Dame and Vanderbilt comparison.
Now, Mitch, you may have answered this already, but at the end of the season, you have Vandy and UT, and that may be, at least for Vandy, the game for them getting – they need that game to get into the college football playoffs. They should hope that UT wins the remaining 2 games prior to them. Because if they don't,
sure.
then that win versus Tennessee doesn't look as good. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, in fact, I said last week, Vanderbilt fans, as much as it might pain them, they should have been rooting for Oklahoma for Tennessee to beat Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Because, a 3rd loss would knock Vanderbilt or Tennessee out. Under this scenario, Vanderbilt would be handing Tennessee its 3rd loss. There's no doubt you want the teams that you beat to keep winning or win before you play them. That being said, I don't think whether Tennessee's a 3 or 4 loss team and Vanderbilt beats them would really affect Vanderbilt's resume that much. But we're looking at it. Your committee's looking at every single thing. You're splitting hairs. So sure, Vanderbilt would want Tennessee to be in the best position possible before that game.
Mitch, there was an interesting story on The Athletic written by Antonio Morales about the trickle-down effect of all of the coaching changes on the quarterbacks in college football. How do you see that playing out with so many openings, so many high-profile coaches being fired? And how do you anticipate seeing that play out in the transfer portal and the recruiting game when it comes to quarterbacks?
I edited that story, so I hope you didn't find any mistakes or typos in it.
None so far.
I don't want to hear about it if you did. it's definitely the time frame is different with the transfer portal now being in January and all that, but it's going to be a huge factor. As the story said, there's only 2 blue chip quarterbacks, blue chip by 4-star and 5-star, that are uncommitted right now, and both of them had been committed, but they decommitted based on coaching changes. So when coaches are on the move, they might rather bring in a transfer quarterback. So if you've signed with that school as a freshman, you might be looking for a new home. There's also the bring your own quarterback model, sort of like what Vanderbilt did when it hired offensive coordinator Tim Beck and brought Diego Pavia. You know, North Texas coach Eric Morris has done a great job there. He coached Cam Ward at Washington State. He's going to be a guy schools like Oklahoma State and Arkansas might look at, but they've got a great redshirt freshman quarterback named Drew Mestermaker. And so if you're looking for a coach and you want to get a quarterback, are you going more likely to hire Eric Morris because he might bring his quarterback with him? So I think it's definitely a factor, and there's going to be more quarterbacks on the move after all these coaching changes. There's quarterbacks at schools right now, like Auburn, it's former 5-star from Mississippi State's first name, Deuce. I'm trying to blank on his last name. Auburn brings him in as a 5-star quarterback. Well, Auburn's fired its coach. Maybe the new coach brings a quarterback. So is he on the move? So, yeah, we're going to see a ton of movement from the quarterbacks, more so than usual, I believe, because of all the coaching changes.
Mitch Light of The Athletic has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan and Donick. He joins us every Thursday to break down the weekend ahead in college football. Mitch, after the show, I'll go to my car, I'll dig up some change, and I'll send it to you for your hazard pay for being on the show with us without Willie.
I survived without Willie, thanks. I don't need any extra cash this week. What's 5 times 0? You can set that up in my...
I was never good at math, but that's 0. That I do know.
Okay, that's my pay for today. I'm happy with it.
All right. Thank you, Mitch. Always a pleasure.
All right, take care, guys.
615-737-1025. The Titans are on their bye week, which means I think it's a good time for one of our periodic Cam Ward vibe checks. We will do that coming up next. 615-737-1025. D-Mace Vingan Adonik is presented to you by Bax Homeworks. Remodeling done right. Get a free estimate at BAXHomeworks.com.